Listening to All The Best, my name's Pip Rasmussen and I'm in Heidi Pett's bedroom, she's our EP here. And I've got this box in my hands. On the front, it says Brazilian butt lift. And we're about to do some exercises.
Why?
Because...
Why?
How do I explain this? About 6 months ago, I was watching TV and I saw an infomercial for the Brazilian butt lift and I just thought, I need that. I need that in my life. I need to exercise. I'll do it for 30 minutes a day. That's it. I'm gonna get onto this plan. And I did it once.
So, did that work for you?
Not at all.
All right. So, we're going to do some right now, but you better let us know why and what the episode's about.
So today on All The Best, we're asking, does that ever work for you? We're talking door knockers, infomercials, dating apps, pickup artists, or those really bad excuses you make for getting out of things like dates or homework or work. We'll let you know how the butt lift goes.
It's so legit, right?
What do we want to do? We want to do basics... I think you pronounce that boom boom, not bum bum.
No, I think it's bum bum. Bum trust bum rapido.
Rapido. Hey, trust me, he's Brazilian. He says it differently. Should we do it?
Yeah.
All right. Log into teambeachbody.com to get the most out of your workout.
See? They're trying to value add.
The online super gym.
Wow. But you already like bought this thing at 3 o'clock in the morning. What more do they want you to do?
No, I don't want to buy anymore. I don't want to have to go on my computer.
Log in now.
Yay. Okay, you ready for this shit?
We are in Rio de Janeiro, Brazil.
He's the main guy. I don't forget his name.
I promise you, I guarantee you. Oh, wait, now. I wanted to tilt your pelts. Hold your core.
Do you right?
No, I don't think you are.
Oh, he's got his foot up. Okay, yeah, so butt lifting is working out great for us so far. One of the big things I've always wondered about is pickup artists and pickup lines. Remember last year when pickup artist and certified gross dude Julian Blank came to Melbourne?
I'm David Blumenstein. I'm a cartoonist, illustrator, animator, graphic scribe sometimes. I saw this, you know, that it was causing a little bit of trouble, that there were people who were getting a bit angry about this guy Julian Blank coming along to Melbourne and doing a talk because they'd seen that he was... sort of advocating a lot of sort of unpleasant tactics that even went a little bit beyond what a typical maybe pickup artist instructor would suggest. I was thinking I would go down there just to see what it was like, and I thought, well, we might make a comic out of it, you know, maybe there's a one-page comic in that if it's interesting. But then what happened is that the protesting against him got really, really big and really, really angry, and he got kicked out of his venue and then couldn't find, I think, another venue. So, and they sort of went quiet, and I was like, I wonder if it's going to happen. And as it all just continued to build, they said, hey guys, so meet us on St Kilda Pier, and then we will send you to the secret real location. And I was like, oh, okay. So now it means we're going to have to go out and stand around on the pier in public. And all of the, you know, not just women, but a lot of women and a lot of angry people generally were going to be going down there and go, all right, well, we're going to meet them. We're going to be there and we're going to protest this and we're going to get in their faces. And then some of them started going, and we're going to take pictures of every single one and we're going to out them and we're going to name and shame them online. I was like, oh, ooh, okay. Now that, you know, there was the possibility of people, you know, taking photos of me and posting me online as, you know, evil bastard. I was like, all right, well, probably now if I go, I have to do a comic about it. And so I was a little bit wary of this, but I called my friend Tom Doig, who's a bit of a gonzo journalist at times, and I said, would you do this? And he was like, yeah, I'd do this. So I was like, okay, I'll go down. So, yeah, that was why I went down. I was interested to see what the dudes were like who were going to be there, really.
And what were they like?
Family Guy fans. When I say Family Guy fans, I'm not a huge fan of Family Guy because I find it just kind of nasty. A lot of them are young guys with that sense of humor. And I feel like some of these guys, they'll grow out of it. You know, eventually you realize, oh, this is a little bit repellent. But then some guys who were just, you know, interested in, you know, meeting someone. And I can't begrudge them for going along.
When you're talking about their sense of humor, do you think any of them were engaging with it in a, you know, in a sort of a humorous way? Or was it, you know, was it quite serious? Did they genuinely think that they would go along to this workshop and perhaps become superstars at picking up women or getting a girlfriend?
I think some of them thought that that would, you know, would be that sort of... I think some of them would have felt that it would help them. And then others, I think Julian particularly, because they all, you know, they're patent medicine salesmen, basically. They're there to sell, you know, the experience. He pay us $3,000 each to have the privilege of flying with us to Estonia and trying to pick up club girls. And so the guys who were going along, you know, like one guy I was talking to was like, yeah, I'm never going to pay $3,000 for that. Don't worry. I'm just here for a bit of a laugh, you know. And not, I don't mean that they thought he was shit or, you know, or just to be laughed at. They just, I think his particular brand is to be totally edgy. And that's why, you know, he did the videos that he did where he kind of explained to, you know, white guys that they should go to Japan and act in a certain way towards Japanese girls because they're meek, you know. And he would argue that that stuff's not meant to be taken completely literally and seriously. And I kind of believe that. The problem is that some of the people who go are going to be taking notes and seriously going, okay, right, grab girl by throat, pull down towards my penis. Got it. You know, so I don't know. It's sort of like, well, how much responsibility should he take for guys who take him seriously?
What about the interactions between the protesters and the men who are waiting for the seminar? Were there any that were sort of encouraging, that, you know, were they actually engaged?
Yeah, well, my favourite bit, and I think the one that made it worth writing up as a little comic story, was that an older lady, probably in her 60s or 70s, came over at one point and said, can I talk to you guys? And I was like, yeah, what's up? Because most of the people who were coming over and talking to the guys were female journalists, who I assume had been, that someone had said to them, go down there, you're a lady, they will talk to you, which was absolutely true. They're like, oh yeah, we'll talk to you, we'll tell you all about it. So, but this was this older lady, and she was I was just passing by, and I just thought I'd find out what all this is about. And the guy I was standing with was like, well, da-da-da, and he went into the whole spiel of, you know, the Julian Blank and the whole the company, and they do this and this and this. And she said, oh, because I've met him once, actually, and I found that he was a complete snake oil salesman. And I was like, who are you? You didn't just wander up randomly. And she just said everything that I would have liked to say to the guy, which is like, I don't think it's worth this kind of thing. She was saying to him, oh, look, you boys, you don't seem hideously ugly or you're able to talk. I'd teach you for $1,000 how to meet women instead of three. What do you think of that? And I was like, that sounds great. Started up. But yeah, later I found out that she was the mother of one of the organizers of the protest, and she was just interested to see what people would say, kind of like me. So that was, I thought, encouraging.
Gorilla grandmother.
Yeah, that was really cool.
Do you reckon the rest of the guys felt sort of victimized by their protest?
Yeah, I think that's the issue, is that both sides feel victimized. So, you know, neither side is going to listen to an argument the other way. I don't know. It seems like there's this big melting pot online of dudes who feel victimized. I guess that would be the general heading, dudes who feel victimized, and whether it's by women or by the government or by, like, you know, black helicopters are coming and doing things in the night, and, you know, there's a spectrum of weirdness to all of it, but it sort of encompasses, you know, pickup artists, and then it gets more unpleasant, becomes men's rights activists and Gamergate. And eventually, yeah, you know, sort of psycho-libertarians and Christians who don't believe who believe that segregation is a wonderful thing. And I don't know, it's like everyone is able to feel victimized by something, and because they can go online, they can meet all the other guys who feel the exact same way. And so you get these weird little pools on Reddit and places like that of just I say angry men, but some of them that I've talked to are like, we're not angry. We just know that, you know, gay people shouldn't be allowed to do what they do. You're like, all right, well, we're never going to agree, but interesting to talk to you.
It's kind of easier, right, to be victimized by the fact that, like, girls don't go out with you. You sound a lot less crazy if you feel like you're being oppressed by women than the government has a secret plan.
Yeah. It's, well, yeah, it suits their purposes to consider women a big block that are making life difficult for them, rather than to think of individuals and go, well, you know, the healthier pickup artists are like, well, you know, look, if a girl doesn't want to go out with you, just say that's cool, no problem, and find another one. The problem is that then gets taken seriously and literally, and the same guy will go to every single woman in a whole bar over the course of a night and try to get all of them to sleep with him, which maybe isn't the best way to do it.
I feel like after two or three, they're going to notice what you're doing.
Well, there was one thing. One guy said something while I was on the pier about four. This guy said something about the four try rule or something. And that was something that somebody came up with, where approach each woman four times. That's the magic number. Once, doesn't want, not interested. Okay, try her again. Try her again. That's three times. You could probably try one more time. Yeah.
By the fourth time, she's probably feeling so threatened that she'll just...
Yeah.
She'll engage with you so that you'll stop approaching her.
Well, that's it. You're breaking... They call this breaking through her bitch shield.
Whoa.
You see? Because when a woman kind of looks at you in a bar and goes, no thanks, that's her bitch shield. And it's just something you need to bust through. You know, it's never that, it's just you didn't try hard enough if she tells you to go away.
That's Dave Blumenstein talking to our EP Heidi Pett about that time he tried to go to a conference for pickup artists. He created a comic book about it called Takedown. We've put a link up on our website. You're listening to All The Best. I'm Pip Rasmussen, and today on the show we're asking, does that ever work for you? Behaviours that people do, like knocking on people's doors and asking them to believe in God or the impending apocalypse, selling ridiculous knife packages on the TV, and, yeah, pickup lines. This next one is another story about dating. It comes from a brand new podcast called Private Parts by Irit Polak and Alin Anderson. We're pretty excited to feature it here on All The Best.
Welcome to Private Parts. That's enough, no?
Recordings about the funny, weird, and frustrating ways gender shapes our lives.
The word is mate.
My name is Irit. I came out of a 6-year relationship quite recently, and in the time that I've been single, I started to notice how slippery, confusing, but also defining the word mate can be. This piece was co-produced with Izzy Roberts Orr and myself for Private Parts.
Mate.
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 Mate. Hey, mate.
Hey, mate. Let me share with you my latest experience of mate. This is last night at about midnight. So I was just talking to this guy. I'm in Melbourne at the moment. He's in Sydney. I said, so what are you doing on Saturday night? And then he replied with, sick mate. I'm not sure. I think there's a house party I'm supposed to remember, but I don't. What about you? I don't know whether it's just me, but I find that confusing. Here's a conversation I had about the root of the word with David Astle, who's a resident dictionary expert on SBS's letters and numbers.
Yeah, mate has
has really fascinating origins. It relates back to Old English met, M-E-T-E, which is the word for meat, and the idea being it's someone that you share your table with, in the same way that companion, with the pan in the middle of companion, is someone that you share bread with, break bread with. And then mate went viral with warfare, and that's when mateship really, formally we were with allies, informally we were with mates. So you fought beside your mate, you looked after your mate, and it was what now may be called bros, because it was certainly a masculine term. Women were never mates. It was a kind of a brothership, a fraternal form of address, and a very endearing one.
So what other words can we substitute in for mate? Ace, gang buddy, buddy, bestie, bra, duke, brosa, fella, bud, friend, cat, china, cool, frood, cousin, g-dog, friends, girlfriend, cuz, dog, hobo, duke, homegirl, fella, homie, frenemy, kid, crush, mang, frood, my boy, g-dog, neighbor, girlfriend, pal, partner, hobo, peaches, homegirl, pookie, homie, papa, posse, kid, raw dog, mang, roll, my boy, rat, neighbor, sister, sweetie, pal, thick, partner, tight, peaches, wheezy, pookie, woody, wingman, young buck.
So it suddenly has gone from this celebratory, you know, 17 vowel mating cry of Australia, mate, into this complicated form of address that is has become so so versatile, it's almost losing its identity.
There's the actual friends that I use it for, and then there's this whole category of people with like a giant question mark on it that I use mate for, and yeah, it's really bad. Like, I ended up dating a mate last year.
Well, it's kind of, you know, like I was thinking the other day why, well, so my partner, when we met, she sort of sent me a message saying, let's be mates, which was really sweet.
Mm-hmm.
And it was kind of, you know, a very open sort of thing to say, not the most flirtatious thing you could say, but, you know, it sort of sealed her friendliness and sort of loveliness in a kind of really nice way.
There's a dear friend who has gone through a lot of relationship trouble in the last couple of years. I won't mention her name, but in her correspondence with me, and we often text because we have to, you know, carpool and things like that, there was the confusion of the X, which would end an occasional text. That's a different quagmire altogether. But then the word mate started dripping into her correspondence.
Mm-hmm.
And she is a mate, but she's also a potential mate because she's on the market, mm-hmm. Which is a terrible phrase. But, you know, she herself knows that that's the new game she has to play if she wants to partner up or find a mate.
Izzy asked some mates what they think of when they hear the word mate.
An old buddy, old dude, old guy mate.
Chess.
Someone yelling across the street, eating a sandwich while they're on a construction site. And then I walk past, and I've got my sandwich, and I'm eating it as well. And we look at each other, he yells, mate. And we both hold out our sandwiches, mutual sandwich appreciation.
What the fuck?
That's what I think of when I hear the word mate.
I think of two things. I think of the Discovery Channel and lions in the savannah finding a mate. And I think about large, hairy Australian men down at the pub calling each other mate. And I think of the first time I ever tried to call someone else mate because I didn't feel like it was part of, you know, who I was really or my heritage or how I interacted. But one day when I was a kid, I made a very conscious decision. I got on the bus and I said to the bus driver, "Good morning, mate." and he gave me a weird look.
Come and have a drink.
No, I'm just not
thinking about it. Come on, come and have a drink.
Look, mate, I've given up drinking for a while.
What's wrong with you, you bastard? Why don't you come and drink with me? I just brought you 50 miles and eating dust and you won't drink with me. Look, what's wrong with you?
What's the matter with you people, huh? You sponge on you, burn your house down, murder your wife, rape your child, that's all right. But I'll have a drink with you, not have a flaming bloody drink with you. That's a criminal offence. That's the end of the bloody world.
You're mad, you bastard.
My best friend, you know, we have like all of these like buddy, pal, like stupid, but mate is like his ultimate. And so I come home, like we live in the same house, and I'll come home at, you know, whatever o'clock, exhausted, walk into the kitchen, Zarin, his pajamas, cooking his like lentil stew for the whole week. And it's, hey mate, how you going? Like every time. And he's not particularly ochre, like it's not, he doesn't have many Australianisms to him, but that's one that's always there, just like, hey mate. And even that tone is like something that's quite caring. You know, if I look like shit, I walk in and Ben's, hey mate, how are you? And that kind of like real weight of care can be communicated in it as well.
I think it's trying its hardest, and maybe we need to be more patient with mate, because I think potentially once it loses its sting or its kind of confusion, I think there is a real potential for mate to be an unloaded, genuine unisex term of amity, and nothing more or less.
Over the course of making this story, I've fallen for the word mate. To me, its meaning is ambiguous because the word itself is in a state of flux. It's changing just like the relationships we have with people change. Passers-by shift to friends shift to lovers shift to a person you used to know. I like that the word lets us slip between levels of closeness. Old mate allows for us to be confused. Thank you to Adam Zwie for helping us with sound design, and the Twerps for your music. Thank you to Heidi Pett and Jess O'Callaghan for your patience.
That story is from our mates over at Private Parts, a brand new audio art project by Irit Polak and Alin Anderson. They call it a collective memory bank that explores identity and perception from a gender perspective, and you can find them at partlyprivate.com. There's a program called Writing Workshop here in Sydney. They do workshops on writing, and it's for kids in school. It's run by a guy called Bernard, and he's got this great thing where if the kids miss a class, they have to write this totally outlandish excuse letter telling the story of why they couldn't make it. It probably works better than the old, "the dog ate my homework." We got them to come into the studio one Sunday and record it for us.
Dear Bernard, I'm sorry that I couldn't make it to writing workshop today, but I got held up by a magical rainbow unicorn. It smashed our car and my mum was injured, so I had to learn how to drive, so I didn't have a phone. After I drove her to the hospital, a giant black scorpion smashed the building, so I had to help get everyone out of the rubble before the doctors could help my mum. Soon after, an alien spacecraft kidnapped me and released me again in Paris. I've always wanted to live in Paris, so I bought a house there. I am currently a billionaire fashion designer who owns a third of the world. I hope you don't mind me not coming to writing workshop next week too, from Amy.
I'm Bernard Cohen. I run a creative writing school called The Writing Workshop. I teach young people aged from about 5 to about 20. Occasionally the kids will miss a week for some reason, or they'll be late, and I'll say, I need a note for why you're late or why you've missed the week, but it can't be true.
I'm not going to lie to you. Why should I? I bet you've heard it all. You can sniff a lie a mile away before they've even thought of it. That's what I admire about you, sir. You're not afraid to call it as you see it. Oh, why am I late? I don't want to bore you with the details. I can understand why you'd be interested, though, seeing as, you know, I'm hardly ever late. It's an interesting concept, isn't it? Lateness. Well, I think it implies that someone was somewhere at a time they ought not be, but I believe that things always happen for a reason. You know, nothing's a mistake and all that. And say, hypothetically, if one did sleep in, then wouldn't that be part of this intelligent design? It wouldn't be lateness at all. Sir, just because I have different beliefs to you doesn't make them wrong. I'd hate for you to be labelled intolerant in this day and age. I had a spiritual awakening. And if it was at an inconvenient time for you, then I guess you're going to have to take it up with some divine power, I suppose. And that's all I have to say.
Beep. You have reached the voicemail of blah, blah, blah. Please leave a message after the tone.
Hi, look, I don't want to worry you or anything, but Tim's in hospital. Please don't freak out. It was just that we were running and he had an asthma attack, so I thought I'd call you and let you know that we aren't home. So don't worry if you get there and we aren't there.
Beep. You have reached the voicemail of blah, blah, blah. Please leave a message after the tone.
It just occurred to me that my last message wasn't very clear. So look, it's not my fault Tim's in hospital. Really, it's the food van people's fault. You see, I was at school picking up the kids, like I'm supposed to do, when the guy who runs the canteen just comes running out. So, you know, really, it's his fault as well. Anyway, these Year 6 kids had stolen some of those boxes of chips they keep in the back and...
Beep! You have reached the voicemail of blah, blah, blah. Please leave a message after the tone.
Your machine cut me off or something. So anyway, the canteen guy is chasing after these kids and the boys decided to hide in the food van. So all the people who work in there started chasing after them. So the boys ran into, you know, the driving bit at the front of the van, and I guess they shifted the car into neutral or something, because the next thing I know, it's rolling towards me and the kids. So we start running, and I was holding Tim up, even though it was really slowing me down, so I'm basically the hero of this story. Anyways, we turned the corner as soon as we could, but by then Tim was doing so badly that I had to call the ambulance right away. Have you considered suing the food van and the school?
Beep! You have reached the voicemail of blah, blah, blah. Please leave a message after the tone.
So the school called me and they wanted to, like, apologize for the incident at school today, but I didn't say anything because I think if you accept the apology, you can't sue them. So I said nothing. But I reckon since it's totally the school's and not my fault, you should definitely sue them for putting Tim through this. And maybe try to find out who those kids were, because now that I think about it, it's kind of all their fault too. Bye.
Beep.
I'm ever so sorry that I could not attend writing class. This, however, is the fault of my pet shark, Lavender, becoming incredibly ill with Hicksontopia. Hicksontopia is a type of illness that sharks get when they swallow books or paper. Lavender ate my writing book. I can explain. You see, I was feeding Lavender, and she loves to listen to stories I make up. So I went and got my writing book and started reading all of my masterpieces of writing that I had written. Lavender, thinking that it was food, leapt out of her tank and ate my writing book. I knew she would get Hicksontopia unless I acted quickly. The only way to prevent a shark from getting Hicksontopia is to extract the book or paper out of the shark. So I had to run and grab my wetsuit from my bedroom, get Lavender to open her mouth wide enough to fit me through, try to find the book, which took quite a while, and then get Lavender to cough me back up. By this time, it was 6 o'clock and writing had practically finished, so I couldn't attend. So sorry.
Thanks to all the kids who took part. Amy, age 12, Belle, age 16, Julia, age 18, and Annalise, age 10. And that was produced by Zasha, age 38, and Lily, age 24. This episode of All the Best was produced at FBI Radio in Sydney in association with SYN and 3RRR in Melbourne and 4ZZZ in Brisbane. Thanks to all the producers who contributed to this episode, Zasha Rosen, Lily Ainsworth, and thanks so much to Arit and Alin for letting us feature their work on the show. You can and you should go to their website, partlyprivate.com, and check them out. They've just uploaded their second episode and it's super great. Our features executive producer is Heidi Pett, my co-host is Michael Bryden, and I'm Pip Rasmussen. All the Best is played across Australia on the Community Radio Network and is made possible by the Community Broadcasting Foundation. And if you want to hear more stories, visit allthebestradio.com and subscribe to the podcast on iTunes.